So, Andre and I have celebrated our 15-year wedding anniversary in March this year. Yeah, I can't believe 15 years have been, it has just passed so quickly. 15 amazing years, but you know, also 15 years where I've discovered that the male and female communication system is quite different. You know, I don't know how many of you have experienced that. You know, we're like, I have my little, I'll show you now what I mean, you know, where you often find that male communication happens in a certain color, you know. My son's walking around with this the whole weekend. He thinks he's really cool with his sunglasses. He says, "Mommy, what do you think, the blue or the red one? Which one is the coolest?" Where female often communicates in a different color, okay? We communicate kind of the same things, but it's different colors. So now you need to read between the lines and you need to learn each other's language. And this is what I've discovered. And I've seen the frustration of battling to see eye to eye in my marriage relationship from time to time. But I've also seen the amazing effect when there's unity and when our hearts knit together, where I actually get it right to communicate in blue. Like once every 6 months or something. It is just amazing how when I get it right to communicate in my husband's language, how God can bless that moment. So what I've done over the last 15 years is I've made a decision. I've made it my mission to learn my husband's language. I've made it my mission in life to learn to communicate in a way that he will understand me. Whether it's a basic family decision, whether it's a church thing, whether it's a work-related thing, whether it's related to our son, I had to learn to communicate to him in a way that makes sense to him, which means I can't always communicate in my color. I have to learn to communicate in his color. And I've just realized that often, you know, as a woman, this is going to be equally applicable to male and female this morning, okay? Just that you know. I've just learned that if God gives us as Christians, if he gives us wisdom or understanding or discernment, whatever you want to call it, but you can't transfer that wisdom or discernment or intuition or whatever you feel or what you perceive into a language that the person that needs to get that or understand that, that makes sense to him or her, that wisdom is wasted. You would agree with me? I mean, you feel you have the solution to this problem, or you have the answer, or you have the discernment. You know, this decision is going to be a disaster, but now you need to communicate it to that person who needs to understand it, whether it's your boss, whether it's your husband, whether it's your wife, whether it's your parents, whoever it might be. If we can't transfer the wisdom we have into a language that the person that need to receive it will understand it, it's wasted. So I've learned and I've seen that if I can't transfer what God gives me in terms of wisdom or understanding or, as I say, discernment, any of those things, if I can't transfer it into a language where people around me can either understand it, and especially the decision makers in our lives, the people who will have the final decision, like your boss or in a marriage relationship, your husband, it's wasted. So I just say to God, "Lord, teach me. Teach me how to communicate in the color that the decision maker communicates with. His or her color." Your boss can be a woman, eh? So it doesn't really matter. You need to learn to communicate in that color, in that language. So I want to ask you, you don't have to raise your hands, I just want you to think about it. How many of you would like to influence the people in your life in such a way that they will actually listen to your opinion, to your wisdom, to your, that, you know, that check in your heart? How many of you would like people to actually listen to you? How many of you would like to be able to transfer what you sense and feel to that specific person who needs to make the decision. I mean, I think we all want to, hey? We all want to, even in society, sometimes in our job situation, there's people who make decisions. And you would love to give your opinion. You would love to contribute. But if we can't communicate in that specific person, in his or her language, it's going to be wasted. So the key is not really to be wise even. The key is not even to have discernment. The key is, how do you communicate that wisdom and that discernment to the decision makers in our lives? Amen? So this is what I want to talk about this morning, because I really believe God has called us as Christians not to dominate or manipulate. That is a whole different side of it, which often happens. But God calls us as Christians to powerfully influence in a godly way. And there's a huge difference. There's a huge difference between manipulating and dominating, because yes, you will ultimately get your way if you manipulate and dominate. However, you're going to pay a price. You're going to lose something in the process. And most often, you lose the heart of the person that you manipulate or dominate or control. You get your way. The result looks often exactly the same. Influence and manipulation, it often looks, the result looks the same. However, you pay a price when there's manipulation or control or when you dominate. When that is involved, you pay a price. You see, so if we want to powerfully influence in a godly way, we have to learn to speak the language of the decision makers among us. Amen? So this is what I want to speak about this morning. And as I say, it could be your husband, it could be your boss, it could be your family, it could be your parents, it could maybe just be a friend. And you feel this person is, you know, this decision is going to be disastrous, but now you need to communicate that. You have the wisdom, you have the discernment, you can see it for what it is, your friend doesn't. But now how do you communicate that? When is the right time? Should you communicate at all, or should you just pray? You know, these kind of difficult things, and we are faced with it every day, every week, in different relationships. You know, and I've realized that to get this right, there's an underlying principle that we sometimes need to lose a battle in order to win the war, which means sometimes we need to lose an argument, or we need to step back. We need to be the least in that situation, even if you feel that you are right, in order to win the person's heart, so that in the moment when it's really important that he or she needs to listen to you, they will listen. Does it make sense to you? So instead of feeling that this is my argument and this is my solution and this person needs to listen and I'm right, I know I'm right, sometimes we have to bite our tongues and step back and lose that battle, whatever it's going to be, whether it's an argument, whether it's a principle that you're talking about, whether it's whatever it might be. Sometimes we need to lose a battle in order to win the war. And I've seen that over and over, that, you know, it's a similar principle where we say you need to pick your battles, you know, when it comes to your children, maybe your family. We need to pick our battles, because if we're going to fight over everything, if you're going to stand on your rights for everything, ever, always, you know, at all times, you're winning your battles, yes, but you're slowly but surely losing the war. You're losing the heart of that person. Therefore, it's so valuable sometimes to lose a battle and just to know, it's fine, because I'm fully in control of this war. It's a strategic loss. You know, you lose strategically, because ultimately, you're winning the heart of that person. And ultimately, on the day that it's really necessary, that it's really, really, really important that he or she need to listen to you, he or she will, because you've been willing to take a few losses. But on the day when it's really important, there will be an openness, there will be a trust relationship. So I want to take you, let's go to the Bible, okay? Maybe you think, Sonika, sounds good, but where's the scriptures? Where's the scriptures? I want to take you to the book of Esther. I'm going to give you a few scriptures, but I want to speak about Queen Vashti first. Remember the queen just before Esther? Everybody always speaks about Esther, you know? But I want to take you to the queen who was in charge, or not in charge, but married to the king just before Esther. And I just want to show you a few scriptures. All right. There was a big party, all right? The king decided, big party for everybody. The men had their own party. The women had their own party with the queen. So it says in Esther 1 verse 9, Queen Vashti made a feast for the women in the royal palace. And on the seventh day, okay, so after 7 days, okay? Just imagine partying for 7 days. Oh, on the seventh day, I can just imagine it must have been wild on the seventh day. I'm making an assumption, eh? But on the seventh day, they didn't only have grape juice, I'm sure. Okay. When the heart of the king was merry with wine, that's now the seventh day, he commanded 7 eunuchs to bring Queen Vashti before the king, wearing her royal crown, in order to show her beauty to the people and the officials. That's in Esther 1, verse 10 and 11. But Queen Vashti refused to come to the king's command. Now, I've always looked at this story, and I thought I probably would have done the same. I mean, who wants to parade in front of 300 drunk men? I mean, I don't know, maybe there were thousands. It's kind of, everything in you says, no, I'm not going to do that. You know, I'm not going to come and parade and now they're drunk and what are they going to say? And, oh, no, I'm not doing this. So Queen Vashti made that decision. Sorry, I'm not doing that. You all know the rest of the story, you know, where the king's advisors told him, I mean, if she's going to do that, my wife is going to do that as well. I think we must get rid of her. You know, it was like, this is not going to go off well. And even though I've often, you know, I've really thought about this story. It's not a story. It was like a real thing that happened. But I've just realized if she was wise, she would have lost that battle in order to be in a position of influence still. But what happened? She won that battle. She said, no ways. I'm not going. So she won that because she refused to go. However, she was removed from a position of influence for the rest of her life. For the rest of her life, she had no opportunity to speak into the king's life. She couldn't help him with any kind of decisions. She couldn't speak her wisdom. She was of no use, really, in that specific relationship. She was of no use because she was removed. She was literally removed from the throne. And if she had wisdom in that moment, I believe she would have said, okay, I'm going to bite my tongue. I'm going to do this now. I don't want to do it, but I'm going to do it for the purpose of staying in this position of influence. Okay, so that is Vashti. Let's look at Esther. Also, I want to give you a bit of a different perspective on her. You know, we always look at the 6 months of beauty treatments and then another 6 months and she became queen. It was a beautiful love story. She was actually taken captive. She was an orphan girl raised by her uncle. She was like forced to go to the palace. She was a girl, a pretty girl, obviously. Otherwise, she wouldn't have been chosen. But she was taken. She was like kidnapped almost, you know. Now she's going to the palace. It wasn't by a free will that she was going. Now she's going through all these beauty treatments. And, I mean, there were a lot of girls taken. And there was a really big chance that she would have not been chosen to be the queen. I mean, there were many other girls, eh? Not being chosen to be the queen. And what happened to them afterwards, they would go to the king's harem and they would be forgotten forever. Okay? Unless he calls them. And he had this whole big harem. So, I mean, even if he calls a girl every day, I mean, it would take a while before it gets to you if you are just one of the masses. So it wasn't all glamorous. The picture was very gloomy. I mean, she had to count the cost. Is she now going to give them attitudes? Is she now going to refuse to? I mean, she had to lose her virginity as a girl. You know, she had one chance with a king. She had to give up something really precious, and then she had, she had to basically trust in God, you know, for the outcome. So it wasn't just a romantic love story. It was a step in faith for her to step out and to do what she did. You see, and I wanna show you what the scriptures say about her. The Bible says she obtained favor in the sight of all who saw her. She obtained favor in everybody's sight. Why do you think she obtained favor? Because she was beautiful? I don't think so. Because all the girls were beautiful. Why did she obtain favor? I want to take you to a scripture in Esther 2 verse 15. It says, "Now when the turn came for Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her as his daughter, to go into the king, she requested nothing but what Haggai, the king's eunuch, the custodian of the women," so they had a guy who was in charge of all these ladies now, "she requested nothing but what Haggai, the king's eunuch, the custodian of the women, advised." So she wasn't on her own mission. She didn't follow her own opinion. She said to him, "Okay, Haggai, what do you suggest? You know the king. What do you suggest? What do I take with me?" And she took nothing except what he advised her to do. And then it says, "And Esther obtained favor in the sight of all who saw her." And the Bible doesn't give us so much information. But with all of my heart, I believe she got this principle right, that she communicated herself in such a way to everybody around her. She spoke their language. Not like English or Afrikaans or German. She spoke the language of their hearts. So on the day that she was going to the king, she was wise enough not to follow her own ideas, but she followed the advice of that guy, the custodian, Haggai. And I believe she learned in those 12 months that she was prepared, she learned to speak the language of the people around her in such a way. And it prepared her for that day when she had to go to the king, remember? When she had to request for, she went to the king without being called, and she could have been killed for that act. You know, he had to extend to her his scepter, and if she was not received, she could have been killed. But with all of my heart, I believed she learned a language of honor, that on the day that she really needed the king to listen to her, he did. She lost a few wars. I mean, she lost her virginity. And as I say, she had no guarantee that she's going to be queen. But she had to put her trust in God and say, "Lord, I'm losing a few battles here. I'm being kidnapped. I'm being taken to the palace. I don't want to go. I don't want to do that." But she decided she's taking a few losses in order to, if she becomes queen, she can speak into that man's life and God can use her powerfully. And she had no guarantee. She had no guarantee of the outcome, but she had to put her trust in the Lord. So let me just give you one more scripture, Esther 5 verse 3. What also happened, after the king received her, he gave a co-rulership with himself. He said to her, "What do you want? I'll give you half of my kingdom." He also gave her his signet ring. At the end of the book of Esther, he gave her his signet ring, which means he gave her permission to make decisions. Because if somebody gives you his signet ring and you stamp that on a letter, it's binding. It's like the king's command, which means he gave her his signet ring. So she went from an orphan girl with the potential of just becoming part of the king's harem to co-leading a nation with this Persian king. It is amazing, the effect of her obtaining favor and learning to win the hearts of the people around her. It didn't happen overnight, eh? It didn't happen overnight, but it did happen in the end when the king, when she really needed the king to listen to her, he did. So let's look at some practical things. How do we practically learn to do this? 2 Samuel 6. One thing that I've seen is a key in this whole principle is we have to let go of our reputation, which is a really hard one. I'm going to explain it to you now. 2 Samuel 6, verse 16 and 23. Now, as the ark of the Lord came into the city of David, it's now Old Testament, this is King David. He was bringing the ark back to the city. Okay, the ark of the Lord was where in that stage in the history of Israel, the presence of God. God dwelt in this ark. So wherever the ark went, there was blessing. Wherever the ark went, God was there. So it was everybody. David was desperate to bring back the ark into the city of David. All right. So now they're bringing back the ark. Now his wife, Michal, it's Saul's daughter. It was the first wife that Saul gave to David. She looked through a window and saw King David leaping and whirling before the Lord. And she was not impressed. You know, it's now not only the king, it's now my husband making a fool of himself, you know, in front of everybody. You know, she was not impressed. She looked through the window. She saw him leaping and whirling before the Lord, and she despised him in her heart. And the result was that, I'm not really going to talk about today, but the result was that she had no children to the day of her death. She despised him. Something happened deep in her heart when she looked out the window and saw her husband doing something that, I don't want to be associated with that. That was the reaction. I don't know you. I don't want to know you. I despise you. How can you do that? You're my husband, but you're also the king. A king doesn't act like this. You know, she was not impressed. She was ashamed of his public behavior, but in the process, she lost. I mean, besides the fact that she was barren for the rest of her life, that's almost like a side issue. She lost David's heart because he said to her, I will even be more dignified than this. So if you can't deal with it, you know, how can there be unity? How can there be a relationship? How can there be a oneness between us if you can't respect my way of serving God? So let's bring it back to a marriage relationship, all right? You can make this applicable to any relationship. But in a marriage, if we want to win, and it goes both ways, to the man or the woman, but if we want to win and keep winning the hearts of our husbands as wives, we have to let go of our reputation. It's a very difficult one. It's a very difficult one. We have to let go of our reputation, which means we have to let go of what other people think of us. We have to let go of what other people think of us. Because you see, in a marriage, you very closely, you are one. People perceive you as one, which means that if my husband does something and I don't agree with that, I don't really want to be associated with that, which means I want other people to understand I don't agree with that. I want the whole world to know that he did it, but I'm not going to do it. Or he did it, but I didn't agree with it. And the moment you are in that position, there's division. The moment you are in that position, you're winning your own battle, yeah, but you're losing your husband's heart. You're losing that unity. You lose that covenant relationship where it is like, no matter what, we stick together. You see, we can only influence in a godly way if we let go of our reputation. Because there will be situations. There will be situations in your life, even in your workplace. Even in your workplace, it's a little bit of a different scenario because there's no covenant relationship between you and your boss. However, what do we do? What do we do when people in authority make decisions or do things or act in a way or perform in a way that we don't agree with? What do we do? What do we do? You see, like Esther, she had to let go of her reputation completely. She had to let go of her reputation. I mean, she had all the right. I mean, Queen Vashti, in a sense, I mean, now she's married to the king, now to parade in front of drunken men. I mean, it's not great, eh? We all agree with that. But now to be kind of forced to lose your virginity as a girl, I mean, that is something to say, sorry, I'm not doing that. You know? That's in my mind, it's like, okay, I'll maybe parade in front of drunken men, but I'm not going to just, you know, be like one of how many girls who sleep with a king and are, you know? I'm not going to do that. So in Esther's situation, it really makes sense to stand up for her rights. It really makes sense. So if we are not willing to let go of our reputation, I'm not saying we must go to that extreme, okay? Just please see it in context. I'm not saying we must sleep around to please others. I mean, there must be a ring on your finger, okay? The guy's got no rights. No right unless there's a ring, not an engagement ring, a wedding ring, on your finger. Let me make it very clear, there's no confusion here this morning. But also, if you think about Jesus, I want to give you a picture of what happened when Jesus became man. When he was born on earth, he was born as an illegitimate child. Remember? Mary and Joseph were not married when she conceived. Okay, so for starters, that is a really, really big embarrassment to the family, to poor Mary, to Jesus himself. I mean, everybody knew, especially in that culture, everybody knew that his mom and dad was not married when she fell pregnant with him. So for starters, he came into the world letting go of his reputation. From the beginning, he had to decide, I'm laying this down. It's huge. It's huge. Now, besides that, in 30 years, he lived on this planet between all of us. He lived among us. And he had to put up with everything that mankind is about, you know? Everything about us, everything we do, we say. He had to put up with it for 30 years until he started walking in his, you know, fully man and fully God part. But up until the age of 30, he was fully man. He had to bite his tongue, I'm sure. He had to bite his tongue many times when people just do things that he doesn't want to be associated with. I mean, I can just imagine in 30 years, how many things happened that Jesus looked at and said, what have I let myself into living among these people? I'm God. I'm God. Why on earth did I do that? But he didn't, because there was a cause. There was a war to be won. And he was going to lose every battle for the sake of winning the war. For the sake of dying on the cross, it also looked like a losing battle. Hey, Jesus' whole life looks like a losing battle in a sense. Maybe except for the miracles that looked like a winning part. But if you look at his life, he sacrificed everything. What if he didn't let go of his reputation? What if he said, no ways, I'm God. I'm not going to do that. Sorry, Dad. You can go yourself. I'm not going. I mean, it is just a very different picture of Jesus. He was willing to let go of his reputation, to live among us for the cause, for the greater cause of winning that war. So, are we willing to do that? Are we willing to let go of our reputation? It's a hard one for me, hey? So I'm preaching it myself. It's a really hard one for me, letting go of your reputation, because our reputation is precious to us, I think, especially when we are Christian. You know, we have values, we have priorities, we have a way of doing things. So now if the person closest to us do things in a different way, are we willing to let go of our ideas and something that's so important to us and to me? Are we willing to let go of that for the sake of our relationship with our husbands, for example? That's the first one. Letting go of our reputation. I would say it's probably the most difficult one. Okay, second one, I want to talk about extending grace. Proverbs 4, verse 7-9. I'm only going to give you three this morning, okay? You can go and chew on it on your Sunday morning or Sunday afternoon. Proverbs 4:7-9. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. So remember now what I said. If we have wisdom, but we can't transfer it in a way that the person will receive it, the person who needs our wisdom will receive it, what does it help? Okay, you can be the wisest person on earth. It's not going to help you if you can't transfer your wisdom. Okay, it will benefit maybe you, yourself, but ultimately we want to be more than just, you know, being wise for our own sakes. We want to be wise for the sake of many others. Amen? Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And in all your getting, get understanding. Exalt her and she will promote you. She will bring you honor when you embrace her. Now listen to this part. She will place on your head, this is now wisdom and understanding, eh? She will place on your head an ornament of grace. A crown of glory she will deliver you. Which means, together with wisdom and understanding, there's a grace part. It's like a crown. It's never just wisdom in isolation. It's never just understanding in isolation. It will deliver to you an ornament of grace. A crown of glory she will deliver you. What does that mean? What does it mean to extend grace? People in authority must have space to make mistakes from time to time. Hopefully not too many. But people in authority must have space to make mistakes without us judging them or rubbing it in their faces afterwards. Our leaders or our husbands must sometimes be able to make a mistake without us judging them. We have to extend grace. We have to extend grace. Your leaders, your pastor, your friend even. You know, we have to be able to extend grace if we really want to powerfully influence the people among us, especially people in decision-making positions. We have to learn to give our opinion with respect, okay? Because I'm not saying here we must shut up and submit, okay? This is not what I'm saying. So don't stress about that. We have to learn how to communicate whatever we have in the right way. And it's the difficult part, but I tell you, when we get it right, I've sometimes got it right and I sometimes got it wrong, and I just say, God, help me to get it right more often. This is just what I pray. Because I'm going to make mistakes until I die in this area. But I just trust God that I will get it right more often. So if we want to influence people in authority, we have to learn how to give our opinion with respect. The right timing, the right tone of voice, all of those things. And then leave it. Leave it. And not to do the, I told you so afterwards. Or, you know, judging or do. Not to like rub it in their faces that, why didn't you listen to me? Because this is our natural reaction. Didn't I tell you it's going to be a disaster? And now we sit with this implication as a family or as a couple. Or as a business. I told you. You see, that is where you unfortunately lose a bit of that person's heart. Because even when they get it wrong, we have to be able to extend grace. You see, the beauty of this is, if you did give your opinion previously, that person knows very well how you felt before the time. It's actually not even necessary to do the I told you so. Or to, you know, to go that route, because that person knows really well how you felt if you communicated it in the right way previously. But if we want to influence the people around us, we have to allow them to make mistakes from time to time. We must give ourselves permission to make mistakes from time to time. We must have grace for ourselves. How much more for the people in influence who need to make decisions all the time? They must have the grace to get it wrong sometimes. Okay, last one. We have to trust, put our trust in the Lord. You see, there's two components to trust, and I want to explain that to you this morning. There's faith and there's patience. Now, often people think faith and impatience go together. It's like faith, faith, faith. Okay, God, when, how, let's move, let's move, let's move. You know? People see that as faith often, you know. There's faith, God is on my side, we must get moving. Now, there's two sides to faith, or there's two sides to trust. There's faith, and then there's the patience component. Now, those two, it's a brilliant combination. It's a brilliant combination. So you have faith, so, okay, God, let's go, let's go, let's go. But in the same time, you have patience that if God is not performing in your timeline and in your way, you can wait. Otherwise, we're going to mess it up. We're going to mess it up because we're going to step in. Because now it's not faith anymore. Now it's me. I'm going to make this happen. God, you're too slow. All right, so the faith plus patience is a beautiful, beautiful recipe. Because if faith gives you the trust in God that he's going to do something, that you need this miracle or you need this breakthrough, but if it doesn't happen in your timing or in your way, patience must kick in. Okay, God, I'm not getting impatient. I keep on trusting in you. So that is the beauty. This is what we need. So are we willing, with this in mind, okay, faith and patience, are we willing to put our trust in the Lord when people in authority make decisions that we don't like or we don't agree with? Okay, there's faith and there's patience. Or what do? Do we walk away? Do we toy and strike and complain and speak badly behind their backs? Or worse, do we take things in our own hands? Because surely this man or woman doesn't know what they're doing. I'm going to do it myself now. Okay, you need to see everything in perspective, okay? Sometimes we need to step in. It's the attitude of our hearts. This is not really about what you do. It's about what's going on in your heart when you do it, all right? You can be perfectly in the right place when you step in and help out. Or your heart can be in the wrong place. So this is what this is all about. This language of honor is not what you say. It's how we say it. It's when we say it. It's how often we say it. It's not necessarily the what. It's the how and the when and the how many times. You see, King David, I know you all know the story of David, but let me just emphasize this one again. He was anointed king of Israel while King Saul was still in charge. Now, in the beginning, David was Saul's favorite. He played on the harp and Saul felt better. And he was his like blue-eyed boy and Saul liked him. Now, in the process of becoming more and more famous in Israel, King Saul became jealous. He was like, who's this little boy, you know, he's taking all my glory. So he became really jealous and it got really bad. It got to a stage where he literally hunted David for his life. David had to flee. He had to live in a cage for years. But even though he had the opportunity to kill King Saul, he said, no way, I'm not touching the Lord's anointed. Now, it's a very difficult part of Christianity, okay? You have your wicked ruler. This person wants to kill me. Surely I can defend myself? But David made a decision. To even though this person is harsh, even this person wants to kill me, I'm going to honor him for the position. David wasn't saying, what you do is right. Here I am, kill me. He fled. However, he said, because of the position, because of that man's position, I'm going to honor him. Which means, in your work situation, you don't necessarily need to agree with everything that your boss does or decides. However, because of the position he is in, we have to honor him. Okay, you have to make that distinction. By honoring, by speaking a language of honor, you don't say, I agree with everything. I approve. It's not what we're saying. It's a position of honor where on the day that even a wicked ruler need to hear God's voice through you, there's going to be a relationship. There's going to be a relationship and that man or woman will be willing to listen to your advice because there's relationship. Because you've honored him or her regardless of everything that you don't agree with. All right, so it's not as if you say, I approve every decision or I agree with everything. It's more like, I don't. However, God is bigger than this. God is bigger than this, and I'm going to honor for that moment when I need this man or woman to listen to me. You know, just one last story, then I'm going to be finished. When Andre and I started dating 17 years ago, that's like a lifetime, I wasn't the woman that I am today. He wasn't the man that he is today. You know, but God gave me pictures of him. I mean, if I must be honest, he wasn't exactly the man that I wanted. You know, he wasn't my perfect, everything perfect kind of man 17 years ago. But God said to me, Sonika, this is what he's going to become. And he gave me like, the best I can describe it is almost like a little photo of him or a picture in my mind, where I would literally see how he would shake somebody's hands. I would see the security in his eyes or the confidence. Or it was just things that I thought, God, I'm not 100% happy with what I see right now. Then God said, it's okay. Let me give you a picture of what he's going to become. And I promise you, he's become all of those pictures and more. But I had to be patient. And I had to give him space to grow. I mean, we met when he was 19 years old. He got saved at the age of 19. We got married when he was 23. So he had 4 years. He had 4 years to transition from... I mean, he wasn't even religious, okay? He wasn't even going to church and know where's Genesis and all those books. He was like, really? Which is amazing, because I needed that. I really needed that, you know, just somebody who is fresh in God. And I had to pray for him. I had to allow him to make mistakes. I had to believe in him when he makes mistakes. And God just said to me, be patient. Keep on believing in him. And I am amazed. I am so amazed at the person that he has become. It is amazing. He's more of a husband than I would have ever dreamt that I would have. But he wasn't necessarily that person 17 years ago. And God had to give me pictures. And I just said, okay, God, I put my trust in you. I put my trust in you. I'm going to be patient. This is the covenant relationship you're putting me in, because I really believe God spoke to both of us very clearly. So I want to encourage you, whether it's a work relationship, whether it's a marriage relationship, whether it's a parent-child relationship, don't give up on one another. Fight for your relationship. Lose that battle if it means that you're going to win the person's heart. Lose that battle in order to win your war. Keep on praying. Keep on believing. Give him or her space to make a mistake. Put your trust in the Lord. You know, I see even with Vian, our 7-year-old son, I see how he flourishes when I speak to him a language of honor. You know, we often think, no, but children, you know, a child is a child, you know. If you're going to act like a child, I'm going to treat you like a child. This is often what we say. And I just see that we can, as parents, we can teach and train our children in many different ways. But if we add a language of honor, if we add respect, it is just so much more effective. You know, I can just see, if I treat him like a child, and I do that sometimes, and I really trust God to treat him more and more like a man, you know, like a little man, because he is. And I can still teach him. I mean, he must do this and he must do this. And I treat him in a way I wouldn't speak to him in a way I wouldn't speak to my husband, because it's two different roles. So I do what I need to do as a mom. However, I can either do it in a condescending voice, or I can do it in a way of honor, you know, where I can also apologize to him when I make a mistake. I can also apologize when I promised something and I didn't keep my promise. I can say, Vian, I'm really sorry. I know I promised that. I'm sorry. You know, there's a mutual respect. There's a mutual, even though he's 7 years old, I can treat him, I can speak his language. And it doesn't mean that he can do what he wants to do. It doesn't mean that he can watch television the whole day or play games the whole day, you know. The other day, Vian said to me, we were visiting my sister, and I said to him, are you excited now to visit her? Because he was going to stay there for a day or two without us. I said, aren't you going to miss me? He said, no, mommy. you have a trillion rules. But Auntie Mariki, she doesn't have rules, but you have a trillion rules. I'm like, what? So he's convinced I have a lot of rules. So, I mean, we do have our rules. We do have our rules, but I can either communicate that in a you're a child and you will listen way, or there can be mutual respect, even at his age. And I just see how he comes alive, you know, where I can do that. So imagine, just to close off, imagine the impact we can have, you can have, on the people in your life. Whether it's a friend, whether it's your husband or wife, whether it's a family member, whether it's a colleague, whether it's your boss. Imagine the impact you can have if you learn the language of that person. And every person is different, eh? So this is like a, yeah, it's like a skatejag almost, you know? you need to find that thing that the person that's going to make him or her tick. And you need to speak that language in order to keep that relationship strong. So that on the day that is really necessary for you to connect and make a decision together, you can do that. Amen.